Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Nat Turner Project book release on Thursday, May 24th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall in Portland. The Nat Turner Project allows artists of color to go beyond the usual initial expositions inherent in presenting art born of marginalized perspectives to a dominant culture, and creates an environment of inclusivity, a communal harbor for artists previously silenced by institutional constraints, and actively provides priority spaces to artists of color. Their first catalog, titled Nat Turner Project Testimony, will be released and celebrated with food, drink, and music. Again, that's the Nat Turner Project book release on Thursday, May 24th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Posies on Saturday, May 19th, 9 o'clock, at the Doug Fir in Portland. The Posies began its career exactly 30 years ago by releasing a home-recorded cassette called Failure. This celebratory show and tour feature the opening band Tara Lightfoot. Again, that's the Posies on Saturday, May 19th at 9 o'clock at the Doug Fir at 830 East Burnside Street in Portland. This is a 21 and over show. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Underground Graduate School, creating lifelong learning opportunities that work for everyone's real lives. For more information, please visit www.pugspdx.com.
One of the things that I think that the Palestinian struggle and the black struggle in the United States have in common is they're fundamentally fighting settler colonialism. And I think oftentimes that gets left out because it's put as, you know, in this country it was segregation or civil rights the problem was, or in this it's apartheid. But in fact, it's really settler colonialism, fundamentally dispossessing people of land and the character of this whole society that's shaped by that. Of violence, that creates a whole violent culture in society itself.
We're here to raise awareness so people can stop believing police narratives. I don't give a damn what they was wearing. I don't give a damn what criminal background they had. I don't give a damn what was discovered on the scene. I don't care about that. When you see somebody getting killed, unarmed, running away, putting your hands up in your car, minding your business. They could have been smoking weed. I don't care about none of that, because them band-aids don't fix bullet holes. No justice!
No peace!
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now. Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance and alternative news from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Ivarum, and on today's show, the convergence of the movement for Palestinian human rights and the movement for Black lives here in the United States, activists on the ground doing the hard work of building solidarity, and the nuts and bolts of the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement were in conversation at Georgetown University recently, and we're bringing you some of those important remarks and strategies. And today, May 11, 2018, is 4 days before the 70th anniversary of the Nakba, when 750,000 Palestinians were displaced and 13,000 were killed in the founding of the State of Israel. Since March 30th of this year, more than 40 peaceful Palestinian protesters have been killed in what has been dubbed the Great March of Return. And thousands have been seriously wounded, with many requiring amputation of limbs, shattered by Israeli Defense Force munitions that are designed to open inside the body and cause internal damage. At the same time, dozens of mothers of sons and daughters killed by the police in the United States were on Capitol Hill this week to demand corrective legislation to end the ability of police officers to kill with impunity. And so, just before Mother's Day, We begin our show with the voices of these mothers, the impact of state violence in this country, and a strategy for change.
I am Tambrisha Hudson, mother of Pia Lori.
Calm down. You got this. You got it, boo.
16 years old. Shot and killed. Running away from the police. Climbing a fence.
Take your time,
Tambrisha.
Take
your time.
Sorry.
Speak for him. On behalf of my son, Pierre Lori, and the movement we have created, which is the 411 movement for Pierre Lori. I jumbled my words, so it's broke down. And I'm not a speaker, so this is something new for me. The 411 movement for Pierre Lori is our outcry and response of family, friends, and community to the ever-evolving culture of police violence being committed in Chicago with little and no accountability. I am here today, alone with so many other mothers, to say that our loved ones, we have to be their voices. We have to tell their stories. We want justice, and we want it now. We want the laws that protect Black people in this country from historically racist policing systems that kill our people with malice and contempt. We want our elected officials to stand with us.
That's right.
And demand that policing in the United States does not continue to allow Black people to be killed with punishment for murderers who have guns, badges, and the authority that they abuse. We want the police officers to be held accountable for their racist tactics, violent measures, and for choosing to use excessive force on Black women, men, and children.
That's right.
Living in urban communities throughout America. We want to leave here today believing that someone, that somebody, anybody on Capitol Hill cares about our losses, our trauma, our pain. This long suffering that we have to deal with for the rest of our lives. We want you to be willing to fight and stand with us and demand justice on behalf of all citizens that deserve respect, fair treatment, and due process.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
Okay, we have a mother here. Her son was not killed by the police, but state-sanctioned violence. And her name is Jackie.
Hello.
It'd be so hard coming behind the mothers that have already spoken to see their pain. But I'm the mother of Kendrick Johnson, the 17-year-old that was found dead in his high school, wrapped up in a wrestling mat. My son was killed in the broad daylight with hundreds of students on that campus with cameras working. But the only camera that they found wasn't working was the one pointed in the direction of where they found his body. My family did not accept the conclusion they gave us, so they have been giving us hell, and we've been giving them hell rat bite for 5 years, since 2013. Out of all 3,000 students, nobody seen nothing. My son went and had a second autopsy done, and all his organs were missing from the top of his head to his pelvis. This included his brain, his lungs, his liver, all the way down to his pelvis, and his body was stuffed with newspaper.
Oh,
so you tell me, if this was a freak accident, why all this? His clothes went missing, his fingernails were clipped on the scene, and blood on the wall, they didn't take the blood and do nothing with it. They just contaminated the whole scene. And I'm here today with standing with all these mothers.
Organ harvesting.
I'm standing to bring focus back to Kendrick, because they don't want nothing said. They want Kendrick's case to stay closed. But I do declare, I tell them every day, every year, they killed the wrong child.
Yes, they did.
I am Kendrick Johnson, and I will be Kendrick Johnson's mother to the day that I die.
Right.
I will speak up for my child until I can't speak no more, because
We keep coming to Capitol Hill. We keep reaching out to people everywhere. But when are they going to do something about all our black and brown babies getting killed every day? And nobody ain't doing nothing. We come, we crying out, we marching, we doing everything. And you're going about it the right way. But when is our time? When is justice for our babies?
My name is Attorney Andrew M. Stroth. I'm a civil rights attorney and the founder of the Truth, Hope, and Justice Initiative, which is the Women Are Here Today. I'm also the managing director of Action Injury Law Group, which is a Chicago-based civil rights law firm, and we represent approximately 30 families whose sons have been unjustifiably and unconstitutionally shot and killed by police.
Okay, so you've been here in D.C. This is the second day. I understand the first day you did some action just trying to speak to members of Congress. So tell me what you want to accomplish out of this 2 days of action.
So we met with members of the Congressional Black Caucus yesterday, and we had a meeting with them, and we want what's very clear. Police should be held accountable when they violate our individual civil rights. Police should be held accountable when they violate our constitutional rights. 13 words need to be added to Section 1983 of the Civil Rights Act. And what are those words? Qualified immunity shall not be a defense in a proceeding under this section. Right now, officers use qualified immunity as a shield to get away with unjustifiably and unconstitutionally shooting and killing our children. The Supreme Court recently came down with a case, Kinsella versus Hughes, and it gave more power to qualified immunity. If you read the dissent opinion by Justice Sonia Sotomayor, I'm going to read it. She said, such a one-sided approach to qualified immunity transforms the doctrine into an absolute shield for law enforcement officers, gutting the deterrent effect of the Fourth Amendment. It tells officers that they can shoot first and think later. And it tells the public that palpably unreasonable conduct will go unpunished. It is our ask of Congress to add 13 words to Section 1983 of the Civil Rights Act. These are the words. Qualified immunity shall not be a defense in a proceeding under this section. So we're here today with mothers across the country and activists and supporters to speak to our political leadership demanding change and hopefully stop the unjustified shooting of our children in America.
Is there anyone from the members of Congress that you met with who are going to introduce this amendment?
Congresswoman Sheila Jackson is an advocate and one of the people we met with yesterday, as well as Congresswoman Robin Kelly from Illinois. Those are two, and they also are going to introduce us to others. So what we want to do is speak to Democrats and Republicans and push for Congress to reform and to put in check the legal doctrine of qualified immunity.
Is there legislation already kind of drawn up, like our draft legislation for the amendment? Or
There's different legislation that's been proposed already. There's several different pieces of legislation. What we're asking is a little different, which is basically the elimination of qualified immunity. So it hasn't been drafted, but we want to work with our leadership to draft that legislation.
What has to happen? I mean, what has to happen to make that happen?
Well, what needs to happen is we need to work with our members of Congress who have that power and work for us as their constituents to draft that legislation. Okay. Because if qualified immunity remains in place, our children will continue to be shot and killed, and officers will not be held accountable.
Is this the line that we keep hearing all the time when they say, I fear for my life?
Yeah, I fear for my life. He was reaching for a gun. He was reaching for his waistband. I mean, like Justice Sonia Sotomayor said, they can shoot first and then think later. Well, that's unacceptable. And there's got to be an objective standard. Or everyone has a right to trial. Let a jury decide what is reasonable or unreasonable versus the officer's one-sided perception of what happened.
Oh, and that's what's happening now.
Yes.
Or a prosecutor decides?
Well, there's two sides. On the criminal side, it's district attorneys and state's attorneys and prosecutors that continue not to indict on actions that we believe are criminal. What we do is we file federal civil rights section 1983 lawsuits in civil court, and the standard in civil court is a preponderance of the evidence, which is 51% more likely that the conduct was unreasonable. So the criminal courts, as you know, is beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the standard if you're going to charge an officer with a crime and indict him and convict him. The civil case, which is what we do, is a preponderance of the evidence.
Hi, my name is Daphne Robinson. My son's name was Jabril Robinson, and we're from Atlanta, Georgia. When I got a call from him from the police station, he said, Mom, I've been arrested. My son was standing at the bus stop getting ready to come home. Two officers pulled up to him, said he looked like a suspect that had just carjacked someone. And in that time, they said that my son resisted arrest. So they tased him, and they proceeded to beat him, and they took him to jail. So they said that the reason that they felt that he was the suspect because of his hair. You see him on my shirt, he has long dreads. The 2 weeks after that, my son cut his hair off. He cut his hair because he felt like he was a target just by his demeanor, the way he looked. And getting back to the story of, you know, what happened when he was executed. He ran from the police. My son ran around the corner and into the back of a woman's home in which she said that she saw my son running and she heard shots. She said she saw my son fall to the ground and him get back up and proceeded to try to run again. She heard more shots and she saw my son fall face forward on the ground and he was not moving. She said that she was in horror to see that my son had been shot in his back the way that he was. When I arrived on the scene, when I immediately got out of the car, the police chief of Clayton County came down and told me that I could not go any further. That to go to the hospital, my son was transported to the hospital. In actuality, I got to the hospital before my son did.
They lied.
Wow.
They lied.
When I got there, I begged them to allow me to see my son. They put me in a room, and when I got in this room, I sat there for maybe 30 minutes for them to come in and tell me that my son had passed away, that he was deceased. I asked them, could I see my son? I was told no, because it was part of a GBI investigation. I was not allowed to see my child. I asked over and over and over again to let me see my son. Just let me see him. I was not allowed to do that. It's sad how they don't value our children's lives. They kill them down like they dogs. And they don't give us the respect as the parents, as the family. I cry every day for my son. I don't sleep at night. My whole family is affected by this. You know, it's hard. We need accountability. We need justice. We all need justice. This has to stop.
Hi, my name is Nigeria Avery, and my son is Jalatif Williams, but they had him as we called him Little Jerry. On July the 2nd, my son was murdered by Asheville police in 2016. The thing that I do know is that my son got out of his car and he put his hands up and said, my hands are up. And he opened up on my son with a high-powered rifle. He shot his left arm completely off. He shot my son up one side and down the other, across his chest, his neck, and head. But even with all of that, my son, when he fell on the ground, my son was still breathing. So I say, if my son can go through all of that and he can lay on the ground and breathe, there's nothing that I can't do.
Right.
But when everything first happened, they wouldn't let me see my son. And when I first got to North Carolina, the SBI was there waiting on us. And they told me, they said, I don't know how it was when you saw your son last, but that's the last image of your son that you need to have in your mind, because the way he looks now is not the last image that you want to have. And then the second SBI agent told me the same thing. When we were on our way to North Carolina, someone had called someone that was in the car with us and told us that my son had got shot in the face 6 times. So that's the only thing that was in my mind, was that my son had got shot in the face 6 times. But I told the funeral home director that whenever he did get my son's body back, that I didn't care if my son did not have a head, that I wanted to have an open casket funeral, and that's what I was going to do, because I wanted the world to see what they had done to my son.
You have been listening to just some of the mothers of those slain by police and attorney Andrew M. Stroth of the Truth, Hope, and Justice Project, speaking at a rally on Capitol Hill, Thursday, May 10th, 2018. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, on Pacifica Radio. I'm Esther Ivarum. When we come back, voices on Black Palestinian solidarity. Stay with us.
So for us, Black Lives Matter DC and Black folks in general, state violence obviously is not something that's new. It comes in the form of whatever you see on TV, which is also not new. But it also comes in forms that are not just police violence. When we talk about state violence, we're talking about the different kinds of violence that is used for a myriad of reasons, but mostly to criminalize, demonize. So when we talk about state violence as a solidarity issue, there's no way to not make the connection, especially between Black folks and Palestinians. And a big thing that's probably not a surprise, and I'm sure we'll hear a little bit about it later, is that Kathy Lanier was like a premier, we're gonna learn everything we can from the IDF and we're gonna bring it here and we're gonna treat Black folks and those who dissent against the government like Palestinians. So what happened on J20, what happened with the many other anti-protest, anti-dissent fiascos with the police, which they call a brawl. They actually have a patch that says inauguration brawl, because that's what it is apparently. So when we talk about that, then we start to see, right? We start to see that it's not that we're grabbing at straws trying to make connections. And I think a lot of people feel that way, right? Like, okay, Palestinians have it bad, Black folks have it bad, and okay, we can grasp at straws. But when you then look at the effect that like colonization in the ways that works, when you look at displacement and the power of displacement and the use of displacement as a means of state violence, right? Because what you do is control where people live, how they live, and then you can decide when they leave, how they leave, or if they can stay and what you use against them to have them stay. And so you look at settlements, you look at Gaza Strip, and you look at the ways in which if you dissent, if you are a troublemaker, then how about we just throw you out your house? How about when we look at police violence here, there's a very clear distinction in the way that the United States is militarizing police. And it's not just militarizing the police, it's militarizing policing, right? And so the same way that you see the IDF rolling down in various neighborhoods and communities with tanks and all the military gear they can fit on their person. I was in Israel and it was just like, so like they walk down the street like that? Like, not that it, I mean, but it's very different, right? There's a very visual terror that comes with that, right? I mean, I'm just like, we're stopping at a stoplight and they're getting on the bus with the M16s and they're, okay, yeah, we just trying to go to the airport. But there's a definite feeling then of omnipresence, right? And that's something in DC that you can't ignore. Like, I am from Colorado, and so the only time that police have their lights on is if they're like chasing somebody, right? Or they're like doing business somehow, right? And so to come to DC and always see police lights on is wild. Number one, because it's literally letting you know that they're there. And so you create omnipresence. So this is the beginnings of an actually, it's living in a police state to remind you that if you get out of line or forget and get comfortable, we're still here. We're everywhere. But it's a form of terror because now you have connected experiences and things that you've seen. Out here in DC, there's, especially east of the river, there's jump outs. Don't let them tell you that they don't exist anymore. But the ability to stop you
never having to make a record. Search your person. There's been two videos over the last month where people are searching body cavities of people. And people. The cops are searching body cavities just of people that they are restraining or whatever. And so then you start associating when you see police with these things. The other thing that's really important to understand about the pervasiveness of this entire state, omnipresence, and just always having you think of who's controlling you and being controlled, is that our kids, if I start in my neighborhood, right? So as soon as you leave the house, there's an officer generally on my street and generally around the corner. Kids see that on the way to school. And then they go to school, and there are SROs. There are police in the schools, right? They go home, the police are still in their neighborhoods. They've seen whatever they've seen with their parents or heard, see whatever they see on the weekend, and our kids grow up with that idea of omnipresence, right? So in looking at the ways in which we interact here in the United States as Black folks, with the state, with police, there's not a way to dissect the two. And there comes a critical moment when you realize that if we're really resisting here in the United States, there's a limited amount of ways that repression and state violence work, right? And there's not a way for us to resist here or for our brothers and sisters in other siblings in Palestine to resist that don't have connections to how it works, to what kind of resistance has worked, to how mutual aid works. When you need specific things in your community and your family to be able to live, that the state either isn't providing or won't provide, right? Because what else is something that they police? How do you get your food? Food deserts? How do they do transportation to where you're going? These are all like sanctions on keeping people in place, right? Because also in Southeast, for Metro to cut their bills is cutting off the times that Metro runs, it's cutting off the times and the stops, number of stops in Southeast. And so what you see is there's control of movement. How many people have taken a bus like the 92, like from Southeast all the way up to Adams Morgan? And what you see is that cities, especially like DC, also have erected borders, right? Whether they're borders you can see or not, you start going, you see different neighborhoods. And with those different neighborhoods, you see different issues. And with the different neighborhoods, you see different communities that either reflect what's coming in that community or what's coming out of that community. And it's no different. And so we can talk about like the actual, like everyday terrible physical violence, because that's what like pulls at our heartstrings. But if we don't understand the ways that these function, if we don't understand how trauma plays out in our communities because of, if we don't understand that we now live in a world where all of these things are connected daily, that when you have a Muslim ban here, it affects the United States, not just the people in the United States, and not just immigrants. That in a place like DC, the majority of Muslim folks are Black folks. That we can't forget that it's bigger than just that, right? And that's another border. So it teaches us, all of this teaches us to do like this with our communities, right? To get closer, to cut other folks off, to stay safe. But in that, we lose the power of solidarity, right? When we only think the way they think on this continent, right? If we're not thinking about these things internationally, we lose an entire part of that resistance. Because Palestinian folks are doing things. There is a resistance. A lot of that has to do with where they live and the time that's passed. But we can learn from those things. The fact that now there's these exchanges, the fact that now we're taking some of the stuff that they're doing now here, and it's now going to Israel. It's now going and being used in Palestine, right? So, you know, my hope today is that when everybody starts thinking about these things that we understand, right? Because it's like that old saying that they always say is like, they will come for these people and you don't do anything. They will come to these people and they don't.
و من نمی‌فهمم که بالاخره کی با کی این فساد، یعنی کی داره حرف درست رو میزنه و کی حرف درست رو نمیزنه. این جنگ و دعواها هم یک عامل اصلی هست برای ایجاد اون تنش‌هایی که در جامعه وجود داره. عرض که دیگه خیلی خیلی بالا رفته و بالا رفتن قیمت عرض فقط بر سر این خریدنش به اروپا اومدن و آمریکا اومدنش نیست، نشون دهنده یک وضعیت بسیار ناجور اقتصادی هستش. صادرات کمه، واردات گرون خواهد شد با این ارزی که میخواد به ایران بیاید، تولید وجود نداره یا اگه باشه در سطح خیلی کمی هستش. تولید کالاهای داخلی که شعار امسال بود، از کجا میخواد شروع بشه، کدوم قراره که تولید بکنه، چه شکلی بشه. مردم ناراضی هستن، پول ندارند، گرانی نمیدونم، یک عرض کردم زیر پوست شب داره یک اتفاقاتی میفته. حتی روزنامه های خارجی، مجلات نه خبری بیشتر تحقیقی که معمولا یک مطلبشون یک کمی خوندنی تر هست، اونها هم به این قضایا اشاره میکنن که در ایران چه اتفاقی داره میفته. حتی و یک جایی هم خوندم که آمریکا، گروهی حالا مایک پومپیدو و دیگران در این فکر هستن که اگر قرار در ایران رژیم عوض شه، اتفاقی بیفته، بایستی به نحوی باشه که قابل کنترل باشه، ایران تبدیل به یک کشور مثل سوریه ای نشه، چون اون وقت تنش خاورمیانه وحشتناک خواهد شد. حتی اونا هم خودشون، آمریکایی‌ها هم یه خود خودشون جا زدن، ترسیدن که چه اتفاقی ممکنه بیفته. مسئله بر سر حفظ امنیت در منطقه است. شما هم شنیدید یا خواندید که در سوریه دوباره اسرائیلی‌ها یک انبار موشکی بالای شهر حمات رو زدن و بمب بردن، مربوط به سپاه قدس می‌شد. و نکته جالب اینجاست که پوتین در ملاقاتی که با اسد، رئیس جمهور، آقای اسد رئیس جمهور سوریه میکنه، به اون میگوید که، یا در صحبتاشون این حرف پیش میاد که با پایان گرفتن نبردهای داخلی و تسلیم شدن اون عده از نیروهایی که مخالف رژیم اسد بودن در نقاط مختلف مرزی این طرف اون طرف، دیگه وجود نیروهای خارجی، اشاره مستقیم به سپاه قدس و سپاه و خود روسا، در سوریه لازم نیست. به این ترتیب مثل این که دارن عذر سپاه قدس رو میخواهند که از سوریه خارج بشه. در عراق مقتدا صدر، یک روحانی تندروی شیعه مذهب که در اوایل سالهای اول نمیدونم چند نفری رو هم طرفدارانش کشتند که مخالف عقاید او بودند، حالا اکثریت کرسی های پارلمانی رو به دست آورده، درست برخلاف اون چه که ایران میخواست، جمهوری اسلامی میخواست، با تمام تلاشایی که کرد و مخارجی که متحمل شد. و این آقای مقتدا صدر یک حکومت ائتلافی میخواد درست کنه که حتی کمونیست ها هم در این ائتلاف او حضور دارند، با سفرهای کشورهای مختلف ملاقات کرده، کشورهای دیگر مثل ترکیه، مثل قطر، مثل دبی، امارات، مثل عربستان. بحثشون اینطور که توی من دارم میخونم بر سر این هستش که نفوذ ایران رو کم بکنن و یا حتی به انتها برسونن دخالت های ایران رو، جمهوری اسلامی رو، در خاک عراق. اتفاقاتی داره میفته که تا یکی دو ماه دیگه چیزهای رو ما شاهد خواهیم بود.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to invite you to the KBOO Recollected Open House on Thursday, May 31st from 7 to 10 p.m. here at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
Join us for a station open house and evening of on-air programming recollecting notable moments in KBOO Community Radio's early history.
Please join us to mingle with the program hosts, on-air guests, and KBOO community members.
Light snacks and drinks will be provided,
as well as the chance to view the evening's on-air programming while it happens.
Everyone is welcome. Again, that's KBOO Recollected Open House on Thursday, May 31st from 7 to 10 p.m.
at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
More information can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The KABU Board of Directors meetings has been rescheduled to take place on Monday, May 21st at 6 p.m.
خب اینم آهنگ زیبایی بود از شهلا افروز به نام خدا حافظ. دابو جان در دنباله صحبتهای شما یکی دو نفر شاید سه چهار نفر باشن در داخل ایران از تهران در مشاغل مختلف دیدگاه های سیاسی در دانشگاه تدریس میکنند و غیره، یکی دو نفری که به خصوص اسمشون به نظر میاد تو سالهای اخیر زیاد هم چه در از طریق تلفن چه از طریق تلویزیون به خصوص با روابط عمومی بیرون از کشور مثل کانال های Voice of America یا ایران فردا مصاحبه های زیادی داشتن، اسامی مثل محمد نوریزاد، نه اشتباه نکنیم با علیرضا نوریزاده، نوریزاده هم خودش ید طولایی داره و در بسیاری از جاها مصاحبه های مختلف انجام میده، دیدگاه های مختلف داره، ولی محمد نوریزاد که اونجور که در موردش نوشته شده به عنوان یک مدافع حقوق بشری، کارگردان، نویسنده و یا اون نفر دیگه ای که در ایران در مشاجره ها، صادق زیبا کلام، صادق زیبا کلام، اینا اخیرا مصاحبه ای داشتن، همین هفته گذشته بود با یکی از مصاحبه‌گران رادیو ایران به نام جمشید چالنگی، مصاحبه خیلی جالبی بود، و اونجور که این دو نفر به خصوص، این نفر سومی هم در این مناظره و مصاحبه حضور داشت، پسر جوانی بود، هر سه نفر اینا در تهران بودن و نظراتشون رو در مورد چالش‌های جمهوری اسلامی با مسئله انرژی اتمی و اونچه رو که امروز به خصوص کاخ سفید داره راجبش صحبت میکنه، این افراد با این صحبت‌هایی که میکنن، با این جبهه‌هایی که میگیرن، نه تنها که جالبه، گاهی اوقات شما صحبت این رو میشنوید که بله، شاید کسانی مثل این افراد اجازه صحبت کردن دارن که حالت سوپاپ اطمینان باشه، من اینو خیلی میشنوم، ولی از یه طرف دیگه من معتقدم که حتی اگر این واقعیت داشته باشه و این افراد به عنوان سوپاپ اطمینان هستن، باز هم وقتی این صحبت ها میشه، این دیدگاه ها باهاش برخورد میشه به این طریق، این خودش جامعه اون عده‌ای رو که در ایران منتظرن که اتفاق واقعی بیفته، تغییری به صورت بگیره، تغییر از سطح جامعه، مثل این زنان واقعا با دل و جرأت که میان روسری‌هاشون رو برمی‌دارن در ملأ عام و ویدیوهاشو ما دیدیم که حتی از طرف مردم معمولی، آقا داره توی تاکسی میره، تاکسی وامی سه مرده میاد بیرون، یقه این دختر یا زن رو میگیره و بعد تبدیل به مشاجره و زدن و گرفتن و تلفن بزن این دار دسته چادریا بیان که اینا رو بگیرن، و واقعا این یک جربوزهی میخواد، این به خصوص این زنان برومند. و بعد شما این افرادی رو مثل همین نوریزاد یا زیبا کلام میبینین که میشینن یکی بر از دیگری در این مناظره ها شرکت میکنن. این داستان چیه؟ این حکایت، این صحبت ها و این نوع برخورد ها، اینا چیه به نظر تو؟
محمد نوریزاد از خیلی وقت پیش، سالها پیش همین حرفا رو میزد و چندین بار هم دستگیر شده، چندین بار نامه نوشته به شخص آیت الله خامنه ای و در اون به طور مستقیم به او حمله کرده. صادق زیبا کلام ضمن این که انتقاد میکنه، حتی در بعضی از، اگر دنبال بکنید او رو در یوتیوب، در بعضی از مناظره میکنه با همه، در بعضی از مناظره هاش با حزب اللهی های سرسخت به شدت مثلا از رضا شاه دفاع میکنه، یا جایی با اون آقای آیت الله دکتر خسرو پناه صحبت داشت میکرد و میگفت آقا شما هی میایین میگین مرگ بر آمریکا، مرگ بر آمریکا، این عینکی که من دارم به چشم منه، به چشم شماست، مال آمریکاست، نمیدونم این مال آمریکاست، اون مال آمریکاست، وقتی ما داریم استفاده میبریم، این مرگ بر آمریکا گفتنمون یعنی چه؟ از این حرفا زیاد زده زیبا کلام، ولی از طرفی همیشه او برای خودش یک حاشیه‌ای اطمینان هم میسازه. مثلا در همین چندی پیش صحبتی کرده بود که گفته بود اگه قرار بشه که جمهوری نظام بخواد دستخوش آسیبی بشه، من حاضرم حتی اسلحه به دست بگیرم و برم ازش دفاع کنم، که باز بهش حملاتی کردن، جوابی داده، اینجور چیزا. او خودش رو جزء نظام میدونه ولی انتقاد هم میکنه بدون هیچ گونه، تا اونجا که بتونه. کارش هم نداشتن تا این اخیراً، نمیدونم به یک بهانه‌ای، برای او یک حبس یکی دو ساله تعزیری در نظر گرفتن، محکومش کردن و اینها، اتهامش یادم نیست که چی بود. اینها این صحبت‌ها رو میکنن و تنها این دو نفر هم نیستن، نفر سوم رو نمی‌شناسم، دفعه اولی بود که می‌دیدم. دیگران هم هستن، مثلا فرض کنید آقای تاج زاده که معاون عبدالله نوری بود در دولت خاتمی، وزیر کشور، حجاریان هست، دیگران هم هستن که حالا به زبانهای مختلف، بعضی ها آرومتر، بعضی ها بیپرواتر، این انتقادات رو می کنند. معمولا هم جوابشون رو از طریق سایت هایی که مربوط به رادیکال ها میشه، مذهبیون رادیکال میشه، دریافت می کنند. زیاد هم به کار اینا کاری ندارند و عرض میکنم نوریزاد چندین بار زندان رفته آمده ولی هنوز هم همه حرف رو میزنه، زیبا کلام هم همه حرف رو میزنه. اون آقای پسر آیت الله یکی از اسمش یادم رفته محمده، او هم جزء همین دسته هستش. پدرش جزء آیت الله های مثل آیت الله جن خزعلی، مهدی خزعلی، که باباش آقای خزعلی در ردیف همین آیت الله جنتی و اینها بود، ولی فوت کرد. او هم همین انتقادات رو میکنه، او رو هم گرفتن چند بار زندانی کردند. اینها حرفشون رو میزنند و انتقادشون رو میکنند و خیلی هم صریح میکنند و شاید همین انتقادهای اینها یه مقداری در آشوب به پا کردن موثر باشه، یعنی در روحیه دیگرانی که این حرفا رو میشنوند و به دلشون میشینه این حرفا، شاید هم این حرفا خیلی موثر باشه، حتی هم هست. رژیم هم خب نمیتونه دیگه، رئیس اداره زندان ها میگفت که نوشت اگر رقمش درست یادم باشه 18,000 زندانی داریم ما و جا نداریم، اگه بخوایم کسی دیگر رو بگیریم باید زندان بسازیم. همه اینا عرض میکنم برمیگرده به همون وضعیت درونی جامعه. این مارکسیست ها یک نظر خوبی دارند و میگن که زیربنای جامعه وضعیت اقتصادیه، روبنای جامعه اوضاع سیاسیه، دولته، ارتشه، نمیدونم قراردادهای خارجیه، روابط دیپلماتیکه، اینا همش روبنای جامعه است. زیربنا اون وضعیت اقتصادیه، اون چطور باشه این روبنا میتونه عمل بکنه. اگر اون وضعیت خوب نباشه اینا هم خوب نخواهند بود، وضعیتی که ما الان شاهدش هستیم. اگر زیربنای جامعه اون نحوه معیشت مردم درست باشه، طبیعتاً روبنای جامعه هم راه بهتری پیدا میکنه. فرض فرمید ما مثلا داشتیم تا وقتی که تا هم خیلی هم زیاد نه 30-40 سال بیشتر، تا وقتی که پدر خانواده تنها فردی بود که نان می آورد به خونه، خانواده به امر اطاعتش بود. به محض اینکه بچه ها در جامعه، دخترها، پسرها آمدن در جامعه و خودشون نان در بیار شدن، دیگه اون اقتدار و مرکزیت از بین رفت، دیگه اون بزرگی خانواده واسه پدر کوچیک شد، نقشش کوچیک شد. طبیعتاً روابط، اصلا اینجا شما بگید برید روابط بین پسر و دختر زیاد میشه، وقتی دختر خودش کار میکنه پول در میاره، پسر خودش کار میکنه پول در میاره، آزادی برای خودشون خریدن. دیگه پدر نمیتونه بگه که من برای تو شوهر انتخاب میکنم یا برای تو زن میگیرم. این حرف اینها درسته. وضعیت جامعه ما به این شکلی که از نظر اقتصادی، کمون که خودشون هم دارن میگن، یعنی حرف من نیست، درست نیست. یه مقدار زیادیش فساده، یه مقدار زیادیش همون دزدی و اینجور چیزهاست. یکی از این آقایون آیت الله های عضو مجلس خبرگان میگفت هر جا که شما اختلاس دیدید، دزدی دیدید، یه سرش به بانک مربوط میشه. یعنی خود بانکی ها هم، حالا بانک مرکزی یا بانک هر بانک دیگری، اونا هم حق حساب میگیرن میدن. نمونش آقای خاوری که رئیس بانک مرکزی بود، 3 میلیارد دلار رو برداشت و رفت به کانادا. حالا چقدر این وسط ها حق حساب داده که جلوشو نگیرن که بتونه دره، اونو ما نمیدونیم. این ناراحتی ها، این گفته ها، این حرف ها، این شنیده ها بر اساس این هستش که درون جامعه وضعیت درست نیست. این رو میخوام خدمتتون بگم. از نظر اقتصادی مردم ناراضین، ناراحتن، گرسنن، کشاورز آب نداره، نمیدونم کارگر کار نداره، مزدش عقب میفته، چند ماه بهش نمیدن، حتما کارفرما نتونسته بفروشه که پول پدیه کنه به اینها بده. این نابسامانی هستش که باعث این اجازه میده که کسانی مثل نوریزاد و زیبا کلام بیان و اینطور راحت و آسوده حرفشون رو بزنن، چون پشتوانشون میدونن که وضعیت مخوفی است که در داخل جامعه هست. Thank you.
عشقم مگر جز خاطر من منزل مأوا نداری. خوش بیا خوش بیا آسوده بنشین بر دلم گر جا نداری. عشق و هم هر دو با هم بیقرارت روز و شب جان خسته بال بسته در کنارت روز و شب زنور خدایی نشان وفایی بدون تو دل را کجا ببرم به مجلس یاران به جمع عزیزان اگر تو نباشی چرا ببرم. عشق و آه هر دو با هم بیقرارت روز شب جان خسته
یکی از آهنگای جدید شهرام شکویی. صدای خوبی داره، موسیقی قشنگی میزنه، گاهی اوقات آه و ناله میکنه، که داوودم گاهی اوقات از آه و ناله این بچه ها
سبک خوندن این آقای
شهرام شکویی،
شهرام همینه،
درسته.
خیلی آهنگ ساخته، نمیدونم 30 تا 40 تا 50 تا آهنگ ساخته، تو همین مایه است، همه صداش همینه، به همین شکل هم بیشتر میخونه. بعدم نیست همچین یک ناله، نمیدونم بگیم یک فریادی سر میدونم.
ولی از یه طرفی موزیسین بسیار خوبیه.
بله.
چندین آلات مختلف موسیقی رو به بهترین نحو میزنه. اینه که تعداد بچه های هنرمند موسیقی به خصوص در ایران چقدر زیاد شده؟
فکر میکنم ایشون خارج از کشور باشه.
شهرام شکویی مطمئن نیستم، ولی
چون یک بار در یک برنامه‌ای هستش که میان مثل امریکن آیدول،
او برنامه که گوگوش سرهم کرده بود، مثل درست همون
آره. چیزی
وایس یا امریکن آیدول یه همچین داره.
این آقای شکوهی هم آمده بود که اونجا ازش باش بخونه اونجا و ازش پرسیده.
او شاید پس در انگلیس زندگی میکنه.
آره، گفتش که نه من 78 تا آهنگ ساختم و فلان اینا، و من توی اون برنامه دیدمش.
بله. شنوندگان عزیز، دوست خوبمون آقای احمد مصطفی امروز در شهر نیستن، اینه که برنامه خبری ایشون رو نداریم، ولی مجدداً هنوز ما چند دقیقه وقت به انتهای برنامه وقت داریم، اگر مایل هستین زنگ بزنیم 503-231-81-87، من و داوود در اختیارتون هستیم. هفته گذشته یکی از شرمندگان عزیزمون خانم منیژه متاسفانه فرصت نکردن که بیان روی خط و اون برنامه‌ای رو که یکی دو مرتبه در طول تابستون در بیورتون اتفاق میفته و حالت یک چیزی تقریبا شباهت به مثل ساتردی مارکت داره،
چهارشنبه بازار،
چهارشنبه آها آره، و
نمیدونم چهارشنبه است یا نه،
نه 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 درسته درسته، ولی اگر اشتباه نکنم اون چیزی که پارسال بود حداقل دو مرتبه انجام شد و اونم وسطای هفته بود و در شب بود.
در شب بود. درسته. اون شب هم روی عنوان برنامه‌شون هست.
بله
من
بله.
رفتم اونجا، خیلیم شلوغ بود، خیلیم خوب بود.
بله.
غرفه‌های متعددی بود، غذاهای خوبی بود، غذاهای لبنانی یا هر جای دیگه، هر کسی که بیشتر ایمیگریشن ها اونجا رو اداره می‌کردند و از نظر غذایی عرض می‌کنم. اما اقسام غذاهایش جاهای مختلف، نمیدونم از تایی گرفته تا نمیدونم ویتنامی تا مترانه‌ای، همه چیز اونجا بود. چند تا غرفه هم بود و یک سن خوبی هم داشتن و روی این سن برنامه اجرا میکردن. برنامه‌ای که من دیدم رقص‌هایی بود که از هاوایی آمده بود.
او به 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 به
به حال برنامه خیلی خوبی دارن. اسمش هم هست مثل این که بیورتون نایت بازار، یه همچین چیزهایی.
درسته درسته، یک دقیقا یک همچین نامی رو داره و همین رب پیدا میکنه به
شبانه،
شب یک بازارهای بازار شبانه، یک همچین چیزی. اما تو گفتی هاوایی، آقا این مسئله آتش فشانی که در هاوایی، در اون بیگ آیلند یا همون به نام هاوایی هست، چون بزرگترین آیلند از این پنج آیلند هاوایی اسمش اصلا هاواییه و عجیب عجیب
این منتظر بودن یا ناگهانی آمد؟
نه خیر، این منتظر بودنشو بودن، برای اینکه این فعالترین آتش فشکوه آتش فشانیه در روی کره زمین، اینه که مدام منتظر این فعل و انفعالات بودن، ولی خب هیچ موقع نمیدونن که تا چه اندازه و با چه قدرتی بله قراره که این آتش فشان هنرنمایی کنه. و این بار که بسیار بسیار وحشتناک تعداد این رگه هایی رو که به نام فشر اسمش هست، اسپلینگش البته یه چیزی شبیه فیوزره ولی به نام فشر عنوان میشه، تعدادشون یه چیزی نزدیک به شاد حدود 25-6 تا فشرز تا الان وجود داره و به این صورت هست. و طول این مسیر آتش فشانی الان یه چیزی نزدیک به حدود 15-20 مایل رسیده.
به دریا میرسه؟
فعلا توی نهایتا خب بله دیگه، مسیری که داره میره سرازیری همجوری داره میره به طرف آبها، ولی جای خطر و مسئله‌ای که کسی نمیدونه و البته هنوز توی این بسیاری از این مزارع که زمین‌های بسیار بزرگی هم هستن و مردم خونه داشتن، خونه‌های کوچیک و بزرگ و قدیمی و جدید و بسیار بزرگ قشنگ، و این مواد مذاب میاد و اینا رو واقعا میبله و هنوز بسیاری از این افراد با اینکه دولت مرکزی هاوایی همین جور میاد و اعلام میکنه که آقا باید بریم بیرون، اینجا مسئله مرگ و زندگیه و بیش از 2000 شاید نزدیک 2500 نفر آردی از اینجا رفتن بیرون و ایوکویت کردن، ولی هنوز دی زیادی هستن که همون دوروبر هستن. و این مسئله این فیشرز ها اینه که شما مثلا الان توی منزل حتی شاید نشستی یه دفعه دهن زمین دهن باز میکنه و این مواد مذاب همین جور میزنه بیرون، یعنی به هیچ عنوان کسی خبر نداره که الان اینجاست، فردا ممکنه یه مایل اونورتر باشه بزنه بیرون. به هر حال امروز خبر اومده که یه سری جراحات شخصی وارد شده به کسانی که حتی مستقیما مورد حمله مواد مذاب قرار گرفتن، چون توی این 48 ساعت گذشته در عرض شاید نزدیک به 4 روز گذشته تمام این مواد مذاب فروکش کرد. یه دفعه شما وقتی اخبار رو نگاه میکردین مواد مذاب رو از روی وقتی که دوربین رو از بالا نشون میدادن شما توی کوه میدیدید، درسته؟ مثل یک دیگی بود که همجور قلقل هم داشت میزد. به یک باره تمام این مواد مذاب فروکش کردن و از دید به کلی خارج شدن، رفتن تا جایی که رسیدن به سطح آب در زیر زمین. در اثر این فروکش کردن ناگهانی مقدار زیادی از صخره‌ها و سنگ‌ها و اون چیزی که دورور این قله بود همه ریختن توی اینجا و بعد از این ترس داشتن که حالا فشار به قدری زیاد خواهد شد از اون زیر که این بزنه بیرون و این سنگ ها و قلوه سنگ های عظیم که شاید ممکنه اندازه حتی یه خونه باشه به صورت مثل اون
گلوله
بله گلوله پرتاب بشه و همینطور هم شد. بسیاری از اینها سایز های مختلف و بعد با بخارات بسیار مسموم که توش سولفور وجود داره تا جایی که حتی این ماسک های معمولی قادر به جلوگیری از این سموم نیستن و شما باید ماسک